Hello, hello. You're listening to a special Wednesday edition of Is Good on KillRadio.org. My guest today is Janine Zapata. We're going to play a track from a CD that she brought in. This is her performing live at the Wiltern, opening for Raconteurs. And then we'll get into some interview and some live music. You're listening to Is Good on KillRadio.org. Is good on killradio.org. My guest is Janine Zapata. How are you, Janine?
I'm doing good. Thank you, John. Thank you for having us today.
So let's just start with what you play. Are you just a vocalist, or are you also playing an instrument in this act?
Do you know, I'd like to pick it up where we left off.
Okay, right, yeah, before. Sure. Well, we were listening to that awesome live track from your performance at the Wiltern. We were talking about how
Silver Lake is just Silver Lake.
The
it's
money
not
scene.
New York. It's not anything. It's just Silver Lake. It's so close to East LA. That's all it is. It's parlor tricks.
So what do you think is the fundamental flaw in the way that bands are put on in LA?
the bands are put on. I'm not sure I understand that. But, however, I agree with what we were saying. is that you go to places like on Sunset Boulevard, and you pay a bunch of money to park, and you pay a bunch of money to get in the club, and then you pay a bunch of money at the bar. It is absolutely not worth it. It's completely irritating at the most. The doormen are irritating. They deserve every shit that they get. And I think it's off-putting. I think a lot of more people would go and see bands and stay the night that like to go there. What else is there to do? What are you gonna spend your money on out there with people who have kind of like middle paying jobs? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, if it's costing you $20-$30 just to go see the band.
Yeah.
And ultimately venues would make more money off of drinks if more people were there.
Right.
And could afford to drink after getting in.
Right.
Exactly.
And then they give you such a hard time about how many people you're gonna bring, I could go to any of these clubs. They hassle you to death, and you can go to any of these clubs like Hotel Cafe, Viper Room, any of them, and you could see the worst music any night of the week and there's five people there. And I say, how do you keep your doors open like this? Where's your reputation?
I think they hurt the musicians too, because they force them, when they put all the emphasis on draw and none of the emphasis on music, mm-hmm. they force musicians who are just starting out, who are learning to, you know, define their sound, they force them to promote in ways that turn off what would become their audience. So it's like, oh, this is the most important show that I've ever done at Lava Lounge, and I got to make sure, or wherever, you know. You know, I got to make sure I get 50 people or I won't get paid. But you don't really have an audience of 50 people yet, so you've already burnt out all your friends and all your relatives.
Exactly.
And you're not giving people a chance to get to know you and know your music.
And who cares about that getting paid? You have your record. You want to be able to sell your record, and that's it. How much money are you really going to make? No, all of these bands work. All of them have jobs. They're not living off of clubs. It's impossible.
You can't. It's impossible. You can't make a living off of door covers. So you might as well just make it a free show, sell your CDs, like you're saying, and then, you know, the clubs make money.
And the clubs are still making money off the bar.
Off the bar, yeah. And parking and all that.
And Jeff, we actually haven't had an opportunity to introduce you. And what is it that you do in the Janine Spada act?
I play the guitar for Miss Janine.
And you're also part of another band called Sabrosa Purr, which I've also had on the show.
Yes. And yeah, we were here, well, it was a couple months ago, I guess, but
yeah.
It was a while ago.
And how are there two very different sounds?
Very different, and yet there's a thread of similarity, I think, in the maybe just the craziness of it. Yeah, this is a lot more, I guess you would call it mellow, because it's not a full band, and Sabrosa Purr is a full rock band, but this is also what I love to do. So, you know, it's still.
Why don't we go into a live song, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the differences playing for different acts and working together. What are you going to play for us first?
I think we're going to play Fever. Let's do that.
Okay, whenever you're ready. You're listening to Janine Zapata on It's Good, killradio.org. Train. I've
Well, you are just killing me, sweetheart, with your shaky hands. There's no need to be afraid. The wind is blowing hard, and it's blowing south. Why don't you get down on your little knees? I've got the fever, baby, and I'm on fire.
You're listening to Is Good on KillRadio.org. My guest is Janine Zapata. That was stunning.
Thank you.
The words kind of come to mind when you hear a song like that. It's this interesting duality of beauty on one side with the way you present yourself and the style of singing and the quality of the music, and then fear on the other. I mean, it's definitely this sense that I just dropped acid while watching Easy Rider, and you know they're gonna get me.
I think you pretty much hit it on the head.
Were those the two worlds that you were trying to bring?
A finer compliment.
Were those the two worlds that you were thinking of bringing together when you started performing?
I wasn't thinking actually about doing anything or bringing anything together. What I did was I took a moment, basically in silence and let an emotion come to the surface. And then I decided, you know, would this make me uncomfortable to present in front of people? And ultimately the answer was, yes, this would make me feel uncomfortable, but would there be an opportunity to heal doing this? Yes. And so I decided, okay, well, I'll investigate this tone a little bit more and what I want to do. And then the people who come to see the shows, they can partake as witnesses, and then I'll be able to have some healing.
So it's sort of a form of exposure therapy then?
Possibly. If there has to be a clinical term for it, sure. Sure.
Do you feel that as you've been, how long have you been performing as the act, as Janine Zapata?
Oh, a while.
Have you found that you need to continue to go in that direction to sort of get that sense of exposure? You know, that if you do it for too long, it stops being uncomfortable and becomes, you know.
No, there's always more.
There's always more. You can always keep going.
Absolutely. Nobody is finished. I'm certainly not finished. I think there's far more depth to people. We're certainly simple animals, but there's far more depth. It's very complicated. I don't think Freud or any of those intellectuals might have ever thought about therapy. There's no way to describe it anymore, or I think therapy has to change or be moved in a certain way, because there are groups now and cliques that you've got women and you've got men and you've got different ages and you've got different ethnic backgrounds, and therapy isn't anymore for just like white elite people that want to, you know, get together and like do cocaine and then write their theories down on paper and have love affairs with their daughters and things like that. It runs a bit more wide than that.
Sure. How did you start getting involved in music in the first place? Can you maybe not to continue along the Freudian lines, but if you could maybe pull out your earliest musical memory?
Yes. This will give away my age for sure, but I'm not afraid of that. I remember watching American Bandstand and Soul Train, and the Mickey Mouse Club was still on the air when I was a child, I think in black and white.
And you were inspired by those
things?
I was, yeah.
I loved it. I loved it more than anything. And I just sang along with it, and I just couldn't get over the singing and the dancing, and the Mickey Mouse Club was my favorite, though, for sure.
And how did you decide on bringing Jeff into the...
It wasn't my decision at all.
I forced myself upon her.
It was forced
Jeff,
on
you're fired.
Me. It was forced on me by Will of Sabrosapur. He's the lead singer of the band, and I quit. I was done with the business. I was moving to Alaska to be part of a macrobiotic community there and to live off the land. And Will said, no, it's just not an option. And I said, I don't have anybody to play with. I'm not going to do anything. And he said, well, Jeff will play with you. And
this is before I even knew anything about this. Will didn't ask me.
Nobody asked him. And then Will probably just said, Jeff, you're going to play with Janine. And I don't know what you said. Okay.
I said, I don't even know her, and she scares me. That's what I said. I had seen a show that you had done at Club Lingerie with your old guitar player, Michael, and I was literally scared out of my mind because I didn't know if she was going to, you know, hit me in the head or throw the mic at me. Or, you know, like, it's very intimidating being in the audience at a Janine show, and I'm actually glad that I'm on the other side.
You feel
now.
Safer now that
I feel
you're
much
on the other side.
I mean, there's still always a little bit of uncertainty.
Protected by that fourth wall.
Yeah. I mean, she could still turn around and you know, whack me one while we're on stage, but at least I don't have to bear the brunt of her intensity for the most part. So.
Now, we touched on it a little bit earlier in the interview where you're saying we're talking about the differences between playing with a full rock band and playing for Janine. Mm-hmm. Are there things that you do or frame of mind that you need to get into as a guitarist that you think will best bring out Janine's qualities and her music?
I think the main thing that I try to do with Janine is just be very simple. It doesn't really make sense when you think about it because I'm the only instrument, so you'd think maybe I need to fill the space with sound, but for me it's just about holding down the groove or whatever you want to call it because there's nothing else going on instrumentally. So I just try to keep the low end going and just play nice, simple chords that complement what she's singing. And I don't, you know, try not to do much else because I don't want to take away from what she's doing.
Why don't we play another track from a CD that you brought in, and then we'll talk about the writing process a bit. What are we going to play?
We're going to play Zachary. He was a sweet boy. This is track number 5. And he always said, he said, Janine, you look so beautiful without any makeup at all. And he kind of disallowed me to wear any. And I dedicate this to him today.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Janine Zapata. Stick around.
Thank you.
And we're back on Is Good with Janine Zapata. So we have a bunch of different CDs here, some live stuff and some recorded stuff. Are there CDs for sale?
Not at this time. We're working with Jack Douglas, our producer, and hopefully we'll have a record out this year that'll be for sale. But we've got we just rely on a personal experience at the shows for right now.
How much do you write? Do songs come out of you on a regular basis, or do you work really for a long time on one song and then you put together a small group of songs? Like this album that sounds like you've been anticipating for a while, is this going to be a large collection or more like an EP of songs that you really feel solid about?
I don't know. I hope it winds up to be a small order of songs, maybe 7 or 8 songs. I'd like to put out, 20 songs a year at least on a record, if not two records a year, which is really nice because we have the capability to do that these days. If you're not signed with a major label and you don't have restrictions on you,
right? And especially with digital distribution,
absolutely,
too.
And sell them for a buck a piece online or what have you. And I write according to what's speaking to me. Jeff and I last year, I had quit again and was leaving town again and my suitcase is packed once more. And I said, all right, well, I'll just write some songs and let's just, get up and do them again. Everything that we're playing now is basically new from about May of last year. And a lot of things are co-writes. A lot of things are solely written by myself, but Jeff is, put all the music behind it all. And I don't know how I write. I let it speak to me. I write the songs. They come out. That's it. I don't bother to do that task of, getting into the song. It either you have something that you want to say or you don't. I'm no Leonard Cohen. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm simple. I keep it simple. I'm talking to, myself. I need to just be clear about what it is that I want to say and get to the point. And, I'm no mastermind.
Do the songs change, after you've written them and then you hear what Jeff has come up with in terms of the music? And do they sort of evolve after that?
Sometimes they go exactly how I want it to go. Like I say, this is how we're doing this. Like Coming, for example, that's coming up. I said, no, Jeff, I want this. I want to, but he has put the music behind it. I've not once said, play this chord or play this note or, occasionally I've gone to him and I say, oh, I got this great song. It's going to go like this. And then he starts playing it exactly. And I go, wow, that is so bad. That is so awful. Like good looking. Really good. That it started out really horrible. You don't remember, but
no,
okay.
I remember that. Yeah.
And then I say, well, Jeff, what do you want to do? Let's just do this together. And then he comes alive because it's really his influence and his taste and his style and his background and his sensitivity that, I want to breathe through this, so that's what he does. That's
so
what he offers.
You've probably reached a point, at least subconsciously, where in your writing you're already thinking about what Jeff will do with it musically.
A lot of the times, absolutely. There's no question in my mind.
Are you guys ready to do another live song?
Sure.
What's this one called?
Let's do Coming.
Right. You're listening to Is Good on KillRadio.org. This is Janine Zapata performing live in the Kill Radio studio. Thank you.
I'll sing to you at midnight and praise you in the morning. Sing to you at midnight and praise you in the morning. Sing to you at midnight, and I'll praise you in the morning. Yeah.
Janine, how did you develop your vocal quality? Did you take was there any kind of formal training, or was it something you just worked on at home? I mean, you have a very distinct, patient timbre to your voice. You know, where does that come from?
I believe that comes from deciding exactly how revealing I want to be to whom I'm speaking to. What's it worth to me to be revealing? And I just think about what I'm saying, who I'm speaking to, and I try to be consistent with I try to be consistent with feeling something as I'm communicating, and the style develops slowly, I suppose, having enough witnesses to perform in front of. And, you know, the people in the room decide as well how you're going to speak to them. The people in the room are waiting, and they have an energy. And you better pay attention and listen to what their needs are as well. You can't just walk into a room and bombard it with what you want to say. You don't want to lose who you are, but if you're going to communicate with the people that are in the room, you better find a way to do it.
How do you know when you've made that connection with the audience? I mean, it sounds like it's a really important part of what you do. So do you base it on just sort of looking out there and seeing if they're looking back and being quiet? Or, you know, like with a much more frenetic rock act, you know, you could base it on something like, are they dancing, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How do you sort of mentally connect while you're performing?
At first, I try to take some silence, and I listen. What's the room sound like? As if I'm kind of a blind person, I suppose, because there has to be some sensory and effect. How are they affecting me? What is it that I feel from them? And then, you know, I take a look at Jeff, and I don't necessarily see what his mood is in, because he's very consistent. He comes to the plate already very willing to deliver what we decided, was the tone of each song, and I can depend on him. So I take a listen to what he's doing, and then that feeds me a little bit, and I feel inspired to speak to the audience. And then I do my thing, and I try to deliver it, not beat anybody over the head yet quite with it, and try to bring their attention a little bit closer to me, decide and say, okay, you know, is this revealing enough? Is this revealing enough? Is this revealing enough? And keep asking the question, keep asking the question. And then I take a look around the room. I take inventory. What else can I do? And then somehow, some way, I don't know, but they begin, there's a chemical reaction between us all, and they begin to partake. And then we're on. Then we're having a community. Then we're having a conversation.
After the conversation, when the show's over, do you get audience members, you know, coming up to you to tell you what they got from your music?
Yes. And it's absolutely terrific. There's no way that I would deny them that, because that's, again, it's like when you eat, the digestion begins in the mouth. Your final, you know, like excretions begin on how well your saliva forms in your mouth. You know, so the meal is not complete unless you chew and chew and chew and chew properly. And so the performance isn't complete until they've decided what they want to say as well.
Oh, interesting. It's because there are a lot of musicians who I think feel the opposite way, that, you know, they're putting it up on a wall and people can come by the gallery and take a look at the song, but, you know.
And that's okay too. That's, everybody's got their style. But that's not totally how I work.
Now, what about live performances, like your early live performances? What about the first time you went up there and said, you know, this is my music? Was that a nerve-wracking experience, or did you dive in head first?
No, it was nerve-wracking, because I was using my voice in a style that is for really my own privacy. And it's not something that I want to put out there or sing in front of people. It's, you know, I spent my whole life mimicking Loretta Lynn and mimicking, bizarre enough, you know, Al Green and Roberta Flack. And of course, I don't sound anything like those great ones, but
there's a definite soul influence in your music, though. I mean,
yes,
or at least a blues influence. I mean, you can hear it.
Yes. And I worked on those artists and paid attention, you know, to what they were doing. And so the first times that I was coming to stage, I was doing a style of music that I don't feel comfortable exposing myself. That's for me, that's private. And then I thought, you know, with a soulful sound, you know, how can I get what I want to say into that? It doesn't work. So I'm going to have to change. I'm going to have to do something that makes this work. So yeah, it was nerve-wracking because it was uncomfortable, because I didn't have the words that I wanted to say to people. And so I was a voice, you mm-hmm. know, a really great technical voice up there. And that didn't do me any justice, and it didn't do, you know, an audience any justice. It did nothing.
What happens when you sort of touch base with your audience and you realize that maybe that particular night you're not connecting with them, that they're, you know, they're talking and they're drinking and they just came out to have a good time. They didn't come to listen to the music, which happens a lot, particularly with the quieter acts. Like, how do you respond to that? What do you do?
I think Jeff wants to say something.
What Janine will do is go right up to the people that are talking and tell them to please shut the hell up. And if they don't, then she'll repeat. And then if they still persist, then she'll tell them to get the hell out of the room. It's definitely, you know, you love it or you hate it. Like, you're in or you're out. Mm-hmm. You're in there for the experience, or you just need to leave the room and go somewhere else, I think. Because you can't be sitting there chatting and drinking your beer, because you're gonna ruin the mood that we're trying to create with the community.
The mood of the others that are there too.
Exactly. Yeah, you're imposing your, you know, your chattiness on.
So it's not that it's just rude to you; it's that it's rude to the whole experience.
Those people are there for an experience. They come out to be entertained for a reason. Mm-hmm. You know, because we're all working so hard. It's like I'm not the answer to anybody's end of the day. Certainly not, because in every club there's music going on, there's plays going on, there's private parties, there's people like to play pool, they like to go roller skating, they like to go dancing. I'm certainly not the answer, but if they choose me, then
we got to give them what they came for,
right?
You know?
Yeah. I guess it's part of the problem too. With, I mean, I don't know if this is different in other cities, but it seems to me there are very few music venues. Every place is a bar mm-hmm. with a space mm-hmm.
yeah.
that they are trying to extract some money from. Exactly. Like, oh, we have this space. Yeah. Maybe we could cram a band into this closet.
Exactly.
And so the place, the music is sort of an indirect, you know, it's like, come to our bar because we have music, as mm-hmm. opposed to come to our music venue, oh, and we have drinks.
Exactly, yeah.
So it would be nice to see more. I mean, there must be. I'm sure there are some places like that in
LA. Molly's is a good place for that because they've got a bar and then they've got
a separate room
on the side. And there's no, you know, you get your drinks and you come in there and the room is for music. However, which makes me really disturbed about this town is that, you know, people only want to play in Silver Lake, or they only want to play. I don't know when it got so cool. I have no idea because I just don't get it. Cool is empty and narrow, and it's parlor tricks, and it's nothing, and it does nothing for anybody. It's a passing moment.
It's true that there are definite like scenes, like, you know, almost like ethnic geographic areas in other countries. We have music scenes, you know?
Oh, nobody wants to play at Molly's because it's not cool, because it's an Irish pub. You know what? Those Micks get it on pretty good there. I got to tell you. And, you know, another
thing. Well, and that particular venue has a beautiful stage as well. It is an elevated stage
sound.
And great sound.
Beautiful brick wall. It's
fantastic.
You have
Sunset Strip, which is a scene. Silver Lake, which is a scene. And, I've heard bands say, like, you know, oh, you know, we're going to play at this place on the Sunset Strip, and, you know, we're happy to have a place to play where there's lots of people coming to see us, but I'm not sure that we really want to be associated with the Sunset Strip.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, so you kind of have to make sacrifices in that respect.
Look, I don't want to be associated with the Viper Room and paying $10 to park and then the traffic and this and that, and then being like, and having the doorman tell me to wait behind a white line while he finishes his cigarette and talking to his friend, and it's 50 degrees outside, like in the winter, and I'm waiting, but I don't know what I'm waiting for.
Right.
Is it not your job to let me in the club? You know, I'm a grown woman. I really don't appreciate being treated poorly. I don't. I'm a grown woman. I'm a nice girl. And Jeff, I'm yelling at the audience, telling him to be quiet, and he is an innocent bystander just sitting there on stage, letting it all go down.
I think you made a reference before to not wanting to hit people over the head, and I do believe he flinched when you said that.
That's what I'm saying. She might turn on me one day. I don't know.
Well, what do you want to do next? Should we play another track from CD, or you guys want to do a live song?
Yeah, you know what? I'd love to play a live track that Jeff has prepared. This is his own solo project, and this is called Vultures, and it's from a record that he's got on for sale on his MySpace. It's Jeff Mendel, Which Is What It Is. It's track number 5.
Cool.
And he's got this song in an independent movie, Lime Salted Love, and it's beautiful. I respect his solo work completely.
Fantastic. Well, and then that's got to be really important, too, for your own work.
Yes.
It's to know that, you know, if you're going to be backed up by one other sound, it's going to be someone who can also carry a sound on their own.
Absolutely.
What's this track called?
It's called Vultures.
All right. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Janine Zapata. This is Jeff Mendel's solo. Thank you. And we're back on Is Good on killradio.org with Janine Zapata. We were talking a little bit while that song was playing about... wrong channel. There we go. We're talking a little bit about how bands make it and what they what their aim is. And in many cases, I think probably in most cases, it's just to make enough money to only do music and not have to also do something else. Mm-hmm. Is that how you think about it? What are your professional aims musically?
I've always hoped that in the end that I would that people would say I respect her for the choices that she made artistically. That is my professional aim. If there's other glories that come with it, money, an opportunity, fame, in so that there's opportunity to work with artists that I want to work with.
Those people who you want to respect you will be exposed to your music if your music is available.
That's right. But in the end, all the goal is, and all I think about is how can I just be respected in the end for doing the best music that I can possibly do. You know, my mom spent a lot of money as a single mother, saving every penny, working absolute intense marathon hours to send me to private school, to give me kind of a life that, you know, she didn't get. I come from a simple family. Nobody went to college. Nobody has a real trade, if you will. And my mother is a hairdresser, and she's a fantastic, creative hairstylist for movies. She does all kinds of wonderful wigs, period films, fantastic wow. stuff. But I think she hoped that I would have an education, you know, what she feels that society is important, you know, to put on a young person and help catapult them into something else. But I think it would, if I didn't go for respect, and if I didn't go for the quality in the work, I think that probably she would feel hurt.
Like you just threw away the opportunities.
Yeah, so like, okay, so I worked all these hours, and I was a single mother, and I put you through private school and try to get you the best education and keep you from what goes on in public schools, which is a lot of drugs.
And emo bands.
You know, and then they say, okay, yeah, the rich kids in private school, yeah, they can afford, you know, more expensive drugs. But the fact is, I'll tell you from my own personal experience of going through private school my entire life and going to two public schools, you know, at two different times in my life for like a year or 6 months, that there's so minimal of drugs going on in private schools, at least when I was going to school, and it did save me. It saved me from getting involved with the wrong boys, boys in general, when I should be concentrating on art or work or studies or growing up. It kept me away from drugs. It kept me away from really getting into some bad stuff, you know? So she didn't get the lawyer or the doctor or the writer or the therapist, but you know, she got an artist that just used that to, you know, to create the best work possible in the field that I chose.
Well, that sounds like a good note to go to a live song with. What do you want to play for us?
Let's play. Want to try "I'm in Love"?
Sure, if you want.
We'll try that. We're gonna see how this goes. We don't know.
I wish you the best of luck. You're listening to Is Good on KillRadio.org. This is Janine Zapata.
Thank you.
start all night, ride all night to get to you. And I'd ride all night, I'd ride all night to get to you. I am in love. 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3. I am in love. 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3. And it's you, you, you. You, you, you. You, you, you. That I want.
You're listening to Is Good on KillRadio.org. Janine, where are you playing next?
Oh, we're playing tonight at Crane's Tavern. We're happy to play there. 9:30. It's a free show. It's a great place to play.
And do you have any other shows coming up after that?
We don't have anything booked, but check our MySpace page, MySpace.com, Janine Zapata. And we're just booking last-minute stuff right now. We're wanting to play free shows where it's a good place where people want to come, and maybe there's a built-in crowd, so, you know, it can be fun for us, too, and meet new folks and friends and a place to hang out and just be happy, I suppose.
Do you find with all these gigs that, you know, especially the places that have built-in crowds, that you can kind of pull some people out of those crowds and bring them to your next show?
Definitely.
Yeah, for all of us, because Jeff has got a solo project, and he's also got another band, Sabrosa Purr. So it works for all of us. We're just trying to share, you know, the music, share our fan base, and get as many people involved in some good music as possible.
Well, cool. I know you guys just finished a live song, but before we run out of time, if I could get another one out of you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. But I also would like to say before we do that, that... I was very upset at all of our liberal West Coast actors and actresses at the Academy Awards who did not mention once anything about the war when they had an opportunity to do so. Extremely disappointed. I don't know where our liberal actors went, but they went somewhere and they didn't show up. I believe there's a 20% divorce rate now in these men and women coming home. It's the highest divorce rate. It's a very sad situation. And
a lot of families have been torn apart.
Destroyed. They'll have post-trauma for decades and decades and decades. They're not getting the help that they need. And I don't know what else to say that I am personally sorry for them.
And what are the Academy Awards anyway, except a party with very, 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 very rich people voting for each other to give each other an award for being very, very, very successful. Yeah. So perhaps I thought the thing, it was interesting that you brought that up, because I remember thinking that, definitely there was a lack of mention of the war as if it didn't exist.
No mention.
But it was almost worse because they bothered to mention other issues. Mm-hmm. Like, leave issues out of it and stop pretending that it's some sort of platform for anything intelligent, because it's not. It's a party for yourselves. But if you're going to bring intelligence into it, then you really should be honest about it. Not that the environment isn't important, but we're actually at war.
The most important thing right now is Darfur and this war.
Yeah.
It has to be... you have to infect it into those unfortunate places, like where we all recognize each other.
But if you're going to do it, be honest about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I wish there was a way to turn that into a happy thing. You know, it's there's really nothing good that can be said about that entire thing. And it's the thing that still continues to amaze me is that it's still happening right now. Yeah, it's easy to forget. You know, some easy to think about, like, oh, this is something that happened, you know, back in 2003. And everyone's like, oh, we're going to go to war. And then people kind of say, well, I don't want to think about it anymore. And it's easy to stop thinking about it because, like, okay, now you got me going. But it's just, there's a, like, a thing about the news, right, is it makes the news because it's unusual, because it almost never happens, right? So someone, like, kills a family of, you know, 15 people or something like that. You're like, wow, that almost never happens. That should be on the news. So, you know, a war breaks out and you start to hear about it at the beginning. And, you know, there's some explosions and some people die and it's news. But then gradually it becomes more and more commonplace that it stops being unusual and it stops being news. That's why we don't hear anything about Darfur on the news almost ever.
What a shame.
Because it's this continuous thing. There's no actual news coming out of it. And I noticed that seems to be happening with Iraq as well. You hear about should we pull out and things like that, but you never hear about what's actually going on.
Well, you got to watch Hardball every day. You got to listen to Imus every day. You know, it's like those programs. You got to have cable TV firstly, and then you got to read the papers. But I mean, they're doing a real good job of not showing our boys coming home wrecked.
Well, what are you going to play for us now?
Well, we dedicate this to them because we're having such a pleasurable time here and they don't have that opportunity right now. So we'll play Ugly Dogs.
All right. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Janine Zapata.
And we've had a wonderful time with you, John. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.
again. So go.
Janine and Jeff, thank you guys so much for coming in, being a part of the show.
It was our pleasure.
Why don't we leave them with one more track off a CD?
Yeah, absolutely.
While we close down shop. And again, you're performing tonight at Crane's Tavern?
Yeah, 9:30, free show. Got lots of friends coming down. It's a wonderful place to play. It's around the corner from the Fonda Theater on El Centro, in between Hollywood and Sunset, and near Vine and Gower, somewhere about there. They've got a website.
And just for those listening, it's myspace.com/JONNEIENEZAPATA, correct?
Thank you. Absolutely. Okay. Perfect.
What should we play?
Track number one. It's a song called Burn that I originally took to Jeff and was a horrible piece of mess. No, it was nice. It was really nice. It didn't cut it, however, and Jeff and I reworked it together, and it came out to my satisfaction.
If you want to have a listen to the show later, it'll be available for download from isgoodmusic.com, as well as podcast on iTunes. So check it out. You've been listening to Is Good on killradio.org. This is Janine Zapata. Thank you.
baby.